You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Bets are amazing, 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 amazing.
There's a fly ball hit out to left, waiting is Jones. The Mets are the world champions.
Here's the 1-2 pitch. Strike him out. Seaver has 19 strikeouts.
Swung on, hit on the ground towards first.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on the Sunday, September the 30th, 2018. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check out the show all the time at MetsMorizedOnline.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media. And you can get the show on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. Hope everybody's doing well. This is actually a live edition of the Talking Mets podcast. You never know what we could get with the live edition. The number, if you want to call in, is 646-716-8187. Again, the number is 646-716-8187. I'll be on live till about 9 o'clock tonight. We'll see what comes of it. See if you guys are into recapping the 2018 Mets season. We'll start off with last night. And first, I hope you enjoy the new intro. I put some time into that during the game last night. Wanted to kind of put in a different type of intro where it went through like a montage of Mets history, get you a little pumped up, almost like a television program with a little intro. So hope you enjoyed that. I'm sure you could tweet at me or let me know about your thoughts on all that at some point. As far as last night, look, I think anytime the Mets pack City Field, you see how special that this ballpark can be, the love affair between the fans and this team, a really genuine love affair. And I don't want to make this about anti-Yankees, but I've always felt the relationship with Mets fans and the team is just so much different. It's not as transactional as the Yankee fans with their team. And that's just my opinion, being kind of in the weeds with both of these teams over the course of a better part of a decade. I think David obviously means a lot to the fans. You could see that. And I think David was so real. Like his speech after the game yesterday, basically repeating "you have my back" about 30 times. It's somebody who just was feeling an overwhelming amount of love and support. And there's very few times that, you know, you get that little choked up or tear in your eye, but last night's one of those things. When it comes to a baseball game, last night was one of those times. So great job by David. You know, I said, and I was rough on the whole Wright situation earlier in the month, he was not entitled to a position. He couldn't play anymore. Those were all correct, but he was entitled, and I'm glad the Mets were able to work out, with all the work he's put in over the last couple of years, an opportunity for him to have that final goodbye, going out as the best offensive player, best player in Mets history. Maybe not talent, maybe not overall package, but in terms of accomplishments. And I know he didn't win a World Series, neither did Piazza. But at the end of the day, sometimes it's not always about that because there's a lot that has to go into play. And really looking at what has happened since 2015 when he was first diagnosed with the stenosis, you can really say, I love how people say, well, Matt Harvey gave up, God knows what he gave up, to pitch the Mets into the World Series. And look, Matt Harvey, you know, put his health potentially, and I don't know if I agree with that, because his health had these odd injuries since then, since the Tommy John. You don't know if there was a correlation between the two. But if anybody put their health and their body on the line for that 2015 team, it's David Wright, because things were already going well when he came back in Philadelphia in late August that year. But he came back and pretty much was, if you look at statistically, was David Wright for the rest of that season. He was David Wright. And he didn't hit a heck of a lot in the postseason. And I said this during a podcast earlier this month, but he had big hits against L.A. He played well against the Cubs. He had the home run in the World Series. I know his throwing probably cost them a game. But at the end of the day, he gave all he can. And then he came back the following spring, and he gave all he could for about 6 weeks until the body just basically broke down. So you got the final juice, any kind of productive juice that was left and right, you got that between the end of 15, early 16. And if it means giving him a couple of at-bats in a meaningless September Saturday night game to a packed house, he deserved it. And we love David. I think what you see now is the narrative that New York has always been. And what it is that we really appreciate our stars after they're gone, whether it be Patrick Ewing or Mark Messier, or you'll probably see it with Eli Manning. You beat the you-know-what out of these guys. And then when they're not available, you're like, geez, I really miss them. And I think that's the case at Wright, because I remember plenty of people criticizing him in 07 and 08. And I remember debates over at the old NYBaseballDigest.com back in 2009 about how he's not clutch. And if you look back at his September stats in 07, 08, you know, the quote-unquote collapses, there was nothing to indicate that. He was the best offensive player on the team. And then it almost was silly how that World Baseball Classic, that big hit he got, was something he needed to justify his existence. So it really should be reflective to the fans as well how we should maybe look at things. You know, you have all this data in front of you. You all love stats. Maybe younger fans, maybe not some of the WFAN talk radio, you know, a little bit older generation, but you don't have to pay money to get stats. There's Baseball Reference. There's all this stuff. And, you know, to me, it's all there for you. Why wouldn't you just look at it and maybe look at it in real time and appreciate what you have in front of you? So sad, I mean, a fun night on Saturday, sad night, but certainly a night where you can look back and appreciate what a career, what will be interesting with respect to Wright. And we'll throw Reyes into this too, who had a kind of the least, almost like the dessert that nobody really wanted, it seemed like. With the Wright and Reyes era, it's so symbolic of this franchise's history, where you had these very high highs, these very low lows, a lot of unfulfilled promise. And I wonder how it's going to be viewed, because you really can't put Reyes into it because he didn't go to the World Series in 2015, but he's kind of part of it. Piazza's looked at fondly a lot because of what happened at 9/11. We all know about Seaver and what he's meant to this franchise. Cotter Hernandez, the 80s Mets, 86 team, what that means to the franchise. How is this going to age? Wright obviously will age well, but what about the teams? There was so much hatred after this total love affair of the 2016. There was so much hatred towards the 07 and 08 teams, almost from the start after how they game 7 and 06. It's almost like the fans felt betrayed, and then things went sour, and then the team was in purgatory. And all of a sudden, they have this kind of in the middle of the night, the fans get woken up in 2015, and they have this magical ride that almost leads them to a championship. So it'd be interesting to see five, six, a decade from now, how the right narrative will play out as this Mets era. We know everyone loves David Wright, but will there be some fondness? Because there was a lot of fun moments in 05 and 06 and even in 07 and 08 when things didn't go well, and obviously 15 and in between when there was baseball purgatory. You know, you had the Johan Santana no-hitter, and you know, it's not great when you're living it, especially when you feel you don't have a shot to win and you have the Yankees across town. But at the end of the day, there's always positives in every era. You know, I know, and I want to get to the lines. The number is 646-716-8187. I hope you could call in if you're listening live and join me tonight. 646-716-8187. Let me know if you were at the game, want to talk. We'll talk about the 2018 team. It's not just about Wright tonight. But, you know, there's so many fun things that come out of a baseball season. It's not just about this rote domination that I think everybody wants to bring, you know, bring on. Sometimes the most fun seasons are the seasons you don't win. There's always, and that's the thing about baseball, even in seasons where there's purgatory or you're playing out the string, there was some fun things taking away from the last few weeks with this Mets club. So anyway, I'm going to get to the phone lines. I have a couple of friends calling in tonight as well. We'll kick it off. Down in North Carolina, an old friend of the show from New York, does a lot of football now over at his Carolina venture. He probably would, you know, the people that listen to him down in Carolina would laugh if they knew that on a Saturday, college football Saturday, here in New York, we're talking about David Wright and the Mets. But Jim Mojo Morrison, my friend Mojo, wanted to call in for a couple of minutes and talk about the Mets and Wright. And, you know, first, hopefully, Mojo, you've dried out from the hurricane down there. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great, Mike. Thanks for asking. Always great to listen to your show. You give me my Mets fix every week that I don't normally get. It's funny. I'm doing a daily show down here. Do a lot of Braves coverage, which ironically we're getting ready for the playoffs now, and got a chance to, you know, follow the Mets as I do every year. It's been an agonizing, tormenting experience since 1973 when I first walked into Shea Stadium as a 7-year-old with my dad for a birthday present and fell in love with the team and have stuck with them. And last night was very emotional watching David Wright and David Wright's final experience as a New York Met, because, you know, you look at the history of this team, Mike, he's the only one that was here from the beginning to the end and never put on another uniform. I mean, him and Ed Kringle are the only Mets to play 10 years and make the All-Star team. Everybody else, Piazza, Seaver, Gooden, Straw, Carter, all those guys had other uniforms. David Wright was orange and blue, true, from the very beginning to the very end. And, you know, it brought some tears to my eyes last night watching him well up the way he has, because he was an original and very authentic. And I just was very touched by the tribute that the fans and the organization. The Mets finally did something right last night. Pardon the pun.
It's true. And Wright, and, you know, I wasn't at the ballpark. I was watching at home. Wright just came across so genuine. Like, for a guy that has made all the money that he's made, that was every bit the Page Six guy, quote-unquote, that an A-Rod and a Jeter was, I just felt like, and I always felt like that, even Piazza was like this way. There was this regular guy, I'm just a guy from Virginia, overwhelmed. I mean, he's got a wife that's a model, you know. I mean, it's not like he's a regular. He's just as celebrity as an Odell Beckham, but without all the other, you know, extracurricular nonsense, and you just felt a guy that really was humbled by the fans, and you just don't get that anymore. You certainly don't get it across town in the Bronx with these with those guys. I don't know if you get it in at the Garden. You know, it's very rare, Mojo, and you're down in North Carolina, and there's a different connection with the teams down there, but, you know, I just don't see it here in New York, and it was very different seeing the how much he used the term love, how much love he felt and how humbled he was about it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, the authenticity of David Wright is undisputed. I mean, he came to New York a Mets fan. I mean, he grew up in the Tidewater, Virginia area, and the Mets were down there when he was growing up as a AAA affiliate, and he fell in love with the organization, was fortunate enough to be drafted out of high school, work his way through the organization. You know, my boss at the Charlotte Knights, Tommy Viola, when he first got hired into baseball, had a chance to meet David Wright when he was coming up the ladder, and he said that there hasn't been a more nicer, more genuine guy that he's ever met, you know, in all his years of doing the minor league baseball gig. And that's one of the things that you really value working down places like here in North Carolina, where you work in the minor league system and you see these guys as they come through. David Wright never lost it. Like, he never lost his love of the game. He never lost his appreciation for what he had. You know, he valued the opportunity he had. He loved the Mets organization. He loved the fans. And he gave 110%, you know, till the very end. I mean, it's just, you know, he didn't abuse his body. It wasn't like he did drugs like Goodman Strawberry, or he was an alcoholic that went out drinking every night like Mickey Mantle. I mean, his body betrayed him. David Wright didn't betray his body. And that's the unfortunate part, because very similar to Don Mattingly, they had like 7-8 Hall of Fame caliber years, but they just didn't tack enough on where you could make a valid case to put them in the Hall of Fame. But Wright's had a great career. And like I said, he stayed the whole time, and he, you know, he's beloved by Met fans. I can't hear one person that I've talked to in the last week that could say anything negative about David Wright.
Hey, before I let you go, what about this era I brought up in the open? I'm curious your thoughts. I'm curious how this era of Wright Reyes, so to speak, how it will be remembered compared to the Seaver era, the Piazza era, the 80s Mets. It'll be interesting. I don't think you're going to get the answer tomorrow or even maybe next year. But 5 years from now, when the paint dries and Wright's, you know, gone and out of our minds, and when he comes back, it's going to be special again. I'm curious, because there was a very odd dynamic between the fans and the team over the last 15 years during his career. And he's pretty much the positive bridge between, you know, or the positive field around that negativity. There was some real fun times. I'm not sure everyone's going to remember it fondly. Unfortunately, that's the sad part.
Well, you know what the problem is, Mike? We've put so much emphasis on winning or bust. You know, that seems to be the narrative that they, you know, they started spewing in the Bronx in the late 90s. You know, oh, it's either you win or it's agony. People don't realize that only one team wins on a consistent basis. You know, one team gets a chance to walk off, but it's a meaningful games. It's the opportunity to go to the ballpark with your family, be able to watch good baseball, to connect with players like David Wright and Jose Reyes. I think their errors, you know, from that standpoint, as far as a championship, you might give them incompletes. Obviously they had their opportunity in, you know, 05, 06, 07, 08, you know, they fell short, especially in Game 7 in 06 with Beltran striking out. That was a better team than the Cardinals. They should have been in the World Series, and I think they would have won, and that would have solidified Wright. You know, 15 was a kind of a bonus to get there. That was unexpected. They got there a year earlier than most of us anticipated, and then it fell apart again in 17. And the same thing with Piazza. You had 99 and 2000. Seaver's era, they got the one miracle. They got 73. And then, of course, you have the 80s team, which everybody feels cheated by that team. They only won one time. But you look back finally, you know, despite that, you know, Wally Backman, Keith Hernandez, Gary Carter, you know, may he rest in peace. And all those guys are revered by Met fans, as is the Seaver era. So I think when it's all said and done, Met fans will look back at the Wright and Reyes era and say, you know what, those guys gave us a lot of fun and a lot of memories. And, you know, like I said to you, you can't say anything negative about David Wright. We talked about it so many times off the air. And I think when they look at David Wright, he was a near Hall of Fame player. and he gave this team everything he had from start to finish. And at the end of the day, you know, I salute him as a fan, as a journalist, and, you know, I say David Wright did it correctly, not to use the word right again, and he walks out with his head up high, and you can't say anything. There's no scandals. There was no, you know, PEDs. There's nothing that negative you can put on his slate other than he came to the ballpark and gave it all he had and, you know, came up a little bit short as far as championships are concerned. But overall, I mean, I thought he had a great career, and he was an original true orange and blue, I mean, from the start to the finish, and he stayed the whole time. And there's nobody else you can say that to about, you know, the history of the New York Mets. All the other greats had other uniforms. So I think that's what makes David Wright so unique, is he was a star that never left.
All right, buddy, thank you so much for calling in for a couple of minutes.
Mike, great job. I look forward to your hot stove coverage and everything else. I think this team is not as far away as everybody thinks. I think the pitching staff, the starters solidified themselves. If they can, you know, get that bullpen solidified, we say this every off season, and make a few moves. We'll see who the GM is going to be. I don't think this team is as far off as everybody thought earlier in the year.
I agree. Take care, my friend. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you, my friend. Thanks for having me, Mike.
That's our buddy Jim Mojo Morrison calling in down from North Carolina on a bye week for the Panthers. Another blast from the past on the line. Used to co-host a little show called The Weekend Watchdog on the Long Island ESPN radio, and was actually at the game last night. My buddy Joe Bono, who's, by the way, a new dad, so, you know, he's probably ready to jump on and jump off because he's got more important things to talk about. Joe, a long time, you know, we talked about getting you on because you've been chomping at the bit to get at me. But, you know, we're in a good mood. You're a new dad, and you got this David Wright thing, which brings a tear to everybody's eyes. So, you know, there's really nothing to – no negativity tonight, you know. I'll rile them up in a second hour, you know. So.
Highly emotional week. And, yes, I've enjoyed the sky is not falling version of Mike Silva that everyone has heard this year. I guess that's what happens when Terry Collins is no longer the manager. So I was like, who is this guy that I'm listening to now on Monday mornings on my commute? Because it certainly wasn't the one I co-hosted a show with for a couple of years.
We co-hosted, though, during Purgatory when it didn't look like they were winning. So I was watching the game from home, so I wasn't there. And I've heard some people criticize the crowd on Twitter. You know, it was tough because they were waiting for the speech at the end of the game, and you don't know when it's going to end. But I thought early on with Wright, you know, the atmosphere going into the ballpark, it all seemed really mm-hmm. – and you've been to other playoff games. You were at the Santana no-hitter, so you've been at that ballpark for different events. So give me the blow-by-blow being there.
Yeah, a little different because, you know, unlike, you know, Mike Piazza night or most times when teams do something celebratory, they pick a – you know, a Saturday or Sunday in the summertime. This was late September, so everyone's, you know, grabbing their undershirts and their Mets hoodies. And, you know, so you're getting to the ballpark, and it had a playoff game-type atmosphere because it's like the chill in the air and what you're wearing and a sellout crowd, obviously. I think the sixth largest regular season crowd in Mets history. But, obviously, the game was meaningless, and we were there for pretty much – something that was scripted as to how it was going to play out, which was really just to salute David Wright and his career as the New York Mets. And for me, it was really also about how this guy had, after making the World Series in 2015, you know, falling just short of the pinnacle, which would have been to win a World Championship, he created a whole new set of goals for himself after the injury in 2016. Right? His goal no longer was to become an all-star to win a World Series. It was 2.5 years of working tirelessly so he can play in front of his daughters and play in front of the Mets fans one more time. And I think that speaks volumes. He did it for no other reason than for that exact moment. And, you know, he kept on saying afterwards during his speech that I was there to the end to listen to, that we had his back. And I think people wanted to show his appreciation and acknowledgement of the work he put in to do that. Because I don't know if I've ever seen anything like that in sports where someone worked that hard for that long. Just to have a very quick, fleeting moment. That's how special it was for him.
That's right. And I said that everybody talks about what Matt Harvey gave up to get to the World Series in 2015. And, look, I understand that he put his health on the line. But it's debatable. His injuries are not necessarily 100% correlated to the extra innings. But, right, if you look at it, he was diagnosed with stenosis in April of 15. He's out until August. He pretty much gave you whatever last productivity he could possibly give you up until that May night in 2016 where he described, I don't know if you saw the article, how he got into that batter's box that Friday night against the Dodgers. Mm-hmm. Did a home run earlier, and he couldn't even turn his neck, which that's scary. You know, that's paralysis you could be dealing with. And at that point, his career was pretty much over. He probably knew it in the back of his head. He gave you that every last drop. And he was pretty much David Wright, maybe not vintage David Wright, but David Wright in September of 15, and he gave you some moments in the playoffs. That, to me, he could have just said, hey, I'm going to sit out until I'm perfect, and maybe you never would have had that 15 moment. And I think it's a lesson when we talk about, you know, next year, you know, you just don't know when it's going to be next year. And I think, you know, Wright basically put it all out there, and he gave whatever's left for that just one shot. It's a shame it didn't end in a championship, but it's a special moment in team history and for him as well.
No, I mean, it really, really was. And you mentioned 2015, and I think so much of how we remember David Wright is linked to that 2015 run in August and through September. I'm sure you've heard some of the interviews Harry Rosa has done in recent weeks, and he talked about getting choked up when he hit that home run in Philadelphia in his first game back with the Mets down early in that game. And he had so many moments in that month and a half. That home run, the home run in Cincinnati, which was the game that they clinched the NL East, when he scored on the Cespedes double on Labor Day against the Nationals and had the big, you know, pump fist after beating the throw to the plate. The game one, two-run RBI single against the Dodgers. And then obviously the World Series home run in game three, the only game the Mets would win in that World Series against the Kansas City Royals. So, you know what? I don't know how we would view the totality of David Wright's career without that 2015, but that kind of, I think, provided a lot of a bookend for a lot of fans in terms of his career arc. We obviously know him becoming a budding star in 2005, 2006, 7, and 8. Then he was a captain of the team, still putting up very productive years, but those teams in 10, 11, 12, 13 were not going to be contenders. He signs a long-term contract vowing that, no, hey, this pitching was coming, that good times were going to happen. Didn't happen exactly probably as the Mets sold him on when he signed that contract, but nevertheless, they did make a World Series appearance. And, I think he was so much a part of that, even more so than maybe the 2006 playoff team. And that's where a lot of, I think, the memories go from Mets fans most recently, is kind of the young David Wright that was budding superstar, and then the one that we saw in 2015 who was the captain of the New York Mets.
Where does last night at the ballpark rank for you? What is that? You've gotten lucky. You've been at some pretty cool live in the building sporting events. You're the in the building.
Yeah.
Guy, you know.
No, I do. I mean, this one wasn't necessarily luck. It was they announced the date, and I ran to my phone to try to purchase tickets. I was one of those people that got purchased tickets on SeatGeek, and then was told the next day the tickets were gone, but I had also purchased tickets through Mets.com as well, so I had two tickets for that game. I just felt like I wanted to be there. I'm 36 years old, right around the same age as David Wright and Jose Reyes, and when people asked him in the post game about, hey, a lot of Mets fans kind of grew up with you, I'm one of those Mets fans because I'm almost pretty much the same age as both of them. So for me, I wanted to be there to kind of see that part of my memories as a young adult kind of come to an end. And it was really set up so well in that first inning, Mike, with Reyes in there. You know, it was kind of like we were there for David Wright, but it was really cool to have Jose Reyes there too. But at the same time, he does not deserve the same amount of adulation because he chose, to leave and go to Miami. But set up so well in that first inning with the double, the bunt, to move him over to third. Unfortunately, he ended up drawing the walk instead of driving him home. But other than that, that was, it was a great night, and it did give you chills, and my eyes did well up, and they really don't usually do that for sports anymore. The David Wright, Jose.
You stayed till the end?
I did stay to the end. Went with the game with my father, and my dad has one of those bricks outside Citi Field, and the brick actually says, our dad never leaves a game early. So there was no way he was leaving that game. As long as I communicated with my wife that it was okay, that she was still all right with the newborn while I waited for the speech and the tribute video, and she was okay with that. So we did stay with the end. Listen, people definitely left. It wasn't it was still the majority of people were there, but I don't know the numbers of thousands that had to leave. And listen, if you have trains and buses and subways on your way home and it's 11:30 at night, it's understandable. But, you know, it was what it was. But it was a special night for, I think, for Mets fans and for David Wright. And I hope he stays in. I think he will in some capacity with the organization. And I think they will retire his number. It's just a matter of when this will happen. And he'll be the first player to have their number retired that isn't in the Hall of Famer as a Met. And I think that speaks volumes because, you know, he is the best in totality offensive player the team has ever had and a lifelong Met as well. So that will be much deserved whenever that happens. And I'm pretty sure I'll be in the building for that as well.
Well, so I'll give you a little pop here. So there may be Islanders fans in the audience. I'm sure they're aware of what you do, but if they're not,
yes,
you got the Isles blog. Will the Isles blog go on even now that you have responsibilities?
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, we have obviously the season starting up October 5th, Islanders season, the post-John Tavares era. And you can follow me on Twitter at IslesBlog, nyislesblog.com, and listen to the PT Isles podcast every single week with myself, James Duffy, and Alex Peck. So from one blue and orange team that gives you lots of heartache and makes you scratch your head to another. So we'll kind of go straight into Islanders hockey moving forward for me. So I appreciate that.
I know,
Mike,
you've been,
and, you know, go ahead.
I know you've been chomping to get at me. I got to get you back on and get you riled up.
They
can't get you riled up today. You can get you riled up on a Saturday morning.
I was thinking, should I poke the bear? I mean, you're just so overall positive about the team, and I guess a lot of people will probably feel that way, the way they wrapped up September here on a good mark. And you look at June and what June was, you know, 15 games under 500 and what could have been if somehow they were able to salvage that month. Looking at the way the NL played out, I don't think they were getting to 91, 92, 93 wins, but it might have been a different type of season. And there's a lot of questions as to where this team goes moving forward. I know I just heard Mojo say they're not far away, but I don't know what you do with Zach Wheeler. I don't know where you spend the money. I don't know whether or not you invest in a true closer. So whoever that new GM is going to be, it's going to be, I think, fascinating to see what the approach is, because they're very much in this in between state, and it could kind of accelerate one way or the other, depending on what moves they make. So it'll be fun to watch and listen to you.
All right, man. Listen, appreciate the call. Be well. Congratulations again on the newborn. And we'll talk again, my friend. All righty?
You got it, Mike. Be well.
That's a good, nice him to call in. A good buddy from East Coast, the Weekend Watchdog, and get a call. Hey, 646-716-8187. Got some calls on the line. Looks like a couple people popped off during a little bit longer calls. Call back in, 646-716-8187. Going to take a quick break, and we'll return at the top of the hour with more Talking Mets podcast right after this.
Hey, Mets fans. I'm going to let you in on a little secret. If you're looking for the best unbiased and independent coverage of the New York Mets, then look no further than MetsMerizedOnline.com. Mesmerized Online is the go-to place for comprehensive Mets coverage, including exclusive interviews, daily original articles, great weekly features, in-depth analysis, minor league reports, game-by-game breakdowns, and so much more. Find out why thousands of fans turn to Mesmerized Online every day to get the latest news and opinions about the Mets. Coming from an impressive staff of the most passionate fans and skilled writers ever assembled, all in one place. Check it out for yourselves, Mets fans. Go to MetsMerizedOnline.com right now. That's Mets, MERIZED, online.com, and get Metsmerized today.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Talking Mets podcast. Hope everybody's doing well. The number is 646-716-8187, 646-716-8187. Give me a call, and we'll move on. Spent the first half hour talking about David Wright, but listen, if you want to bring up whether you're at the game or a memory about Wright or what he means, like whatever you want, call in. I always say, you know, keep it clean. You could debate me. You could come after me. I don't have a problem with that. I just don't want, you know, any inappropriate language. I have to cut it out on the archive anyway. So, and it doesn't really bother me. It's just, come on, just you know, ruining it for everybody else. So, and I don't know how many people will, you know, and especially because it was weird when I was doing this and I was saying, what can I get done here when it comes to the last day of the season? You don't know, maybe people are burnt out and what have you. So, it is what it is, when it comes down to it. So here's what I'm going to do. I am going to take I'm going to bring up Mickey Callaway's comments. So I have Mickey Callaway's comments. Mickey Callaway and Jeff Wilpon both had press conferences earlier today. And I thought I clipped up about 2 minutes worth of Mickey's comments. And we'll talk about that. And then we'll get in. And Wilpon had a lot to say. I thought it was important for Jeff to speak to the media. I think ownership needs to do that more often during the season. I know that, normally it was Sandy Alderson that did it and what have you. And I think it's important because I think there's a lot of misinformation that goes out there, regarding this organization. And if you're going to let the media dictate the narrative, you might as well get out there and have a conversation with them. So let's get to the Mickey Callaway comments that I had clipped up. So here it is.
Everybody in that room, everybody in the front office, everybody on the coaching staff has to have the best offseason they've ever had for us to win a championship. And I think that's going to be everybody's goal this winter. And understanding that it's going to take some time early for us to really get to know one another. It's kind of funny. I think in my interview, I talked a lot about the stages of group development, and we went through all of those stages, getting to know each other, some tense times in the middle, and then kind of normalizing everything, and then becoming a pretty high-performing group at the end. All that is necessary for a group to kind of create this bond to win a World Series. I think someone mentioned yesterday that this was a very similar season to 68 before they won in 69. And I think they won 73 games, and the starting pitchers had just started to come in their own. Seaver and those guys were really starting to develop. And the next year they went on to win the World Series and win 100 games because they probably went through the same thing we did. It's that group development that is essential for a team to perform at the highest level possible. Now, when we get into spring training, we're going to add some guys and we're going to get knocked down a little bit, and we're going to have to understand and know who those people are, but we're going to get to that high performing stage sooner because they're familiar with the coaches, they're familiar with their teammates even more, and once we get those new guys accustomed to the way we want to do things, and we're going to click on all cylinders and get after it. So I'm excited that the guys really focused on what they needed to do to improve every single day, regardless of how disappointed we all were in the win-loss record at times. And we're going to be a better organization because they took that approach.
Tim in the front.
Is the expectation at the moment to bring your entire coaching staff back as is?
Yeah, at the moment, yeah. We obviously are ending the season today, and I'm proud of everything that they've all done. They've worked hard, they've worked diligently, and they've improved the players.
That's Mickey Callaway. And look, I know that there's been a lot of criticism of Callaway in the media. He certainly had, and I've spoken about that, a tough season with, and he admitted, and I don't know if it was, I can't quite, I was listening to the clip in and out because I clipped it up, but he mentioned it in the conversation earlier today that he's a first-year manager. And I think we all, myself included, underestimated how you take a organization, a team that was with one guy for nearly 7-8 years, that was Terry Collins, and one pitching coach, and you turned over the entire coaching staff. And really, it's no secret, this coaching staff is way different. It's more and more erudite, much more analytically driven situation. I mean, here's Mickey Callaway talking about the stages of, team development. I mean, these are not things that you would get from a Terry Collins. For 8 years, you were basically getting, my veterans run the team, and, I believe in my guys. And look, there's certain, it was deeper than that with Terry, but you bring this guy in and, you have a couple of new players, but you pretty much have the same group coming back. And there was going to be a developmental curve, and they didn't necessarily have the health early in the year. I think some of the pitchers like Wheeler and Matz were still trying to find themselves, which after 2 or 3 years, you would have expected them to be further along, but it takes longer for some. And I think part of that was who was helping them get to where they had to get. I think Island has done a tremendous job. I think Island deserves as much, if not more, of the credit, you know, here than anything. I think the fact that Mickey's talking about a championship and putting that focus out there is important. I think that's a mindset that has been missing from this organization for a long, long, long time. If you're going to win, you have to keep saying, you know, we're here to win a championship. We're not here to win 85 games. We're not here to compete. Yes, you focus on process, but ultimately that process is to win a championship. And I would expect, unless the new GM who comes in completely has different designs on this, and he'd have to probably sell, and we'll get to Jeff Wilpon in a minute, he would have to completely sell Mets ownership on that, because it sounds from listening to Jeff Wilpon that, you know, they expect, or at least they feel that they have enough here to win in 2019. And I agree with that, with this foundation of starting pitching, the emergence of some of the young offensive players and the things that they need, some of them are achievable. And I know it will require investment from ownership, and we'll get to that. But, you know, that to me is a very achievable goal. It's not like you're the Baltimore Orioles who just lost 115 games. You know, look at Oakland. Oakland was a last place team a year ago. And now they're going to be going in Yankee Stadium and competing for a chance to go to the division series. And they've played well. So things could turn around really quick with the right moves, with the right mindset. And I really like how – and we had David Lorela of Fangraphs on a week ago. If you haven't listened to that, you know, you certainly should pop in on that, listen to that. And I really think Mickey is a deep thinker. I think he's very self-aware. I think he wants to do well. And I think the thing that he has to improve upon, and I felt he was pretty comfortable and honest with the media today, but I think in general, when he has those tough conversations, and I know he's trying to protect ownership, he's trying to protect the players, he's trying to be politically correct, in a lot of ways you have to work with the media and give them something which shows that you're not this dunderhead that is just reciting what the front office gives you. You have to, it's a fine line, and I'm not saying I have the answer, but that's where I would say he would, if he's able to master that, he would be able to get a lot more, I don't want to say pass, but a lot more credit from the writers who, you know, have circled the wagon on him. Now, they have backed off on him, and a lot of that has to do with they, you know, basically had the same record as the Braves in the second half. I think they were a game behind or tied, or I don't know how that panned out. I didn't really look at the Braves' score today, but they had a decent second half for the most part. They did it without a closer. They did it where they were really looking to trade off. They traded off their best hitter at one point, who was Cabrera. So, you know, there's a lot to be positive about. Now, as you'll hear, and I'll get into Jeff Wilpon now, he's not guaranteed to come back. I think whoever comes in, whoever the president, and I have a feeling it's going to be more of a president slash, you know, baseball operations guy than just GM. I think in Jeff Wilpon talked about this, how people aren't just going to slide across to another team for the same job because it's New York. I think it would be a mistake after Mickey's worked all year to instill a mindset, and you're going to have, unless you're really going to tear this thing apart, which would be a mistake, a lot of the same players coming back in spring training, like you heard Mickey say, with some new guys. Why wouldn't you try to build on this? Give him the 3 years. If you want to go out and say, okay, you want to go into a win-now mode, let's say you do that, and you don't feel Mickey's the right manager for that, and you have a Buck Showalter, or you want to go after Girardi, or you know maybe Joe Maddon leaves the Cubs. I don't think that's going to happen, but it could. Dusty Baker. I'm just throwing out Mike Socha's gone from Anaheim. You want to go that route and say, I could bring a guy in with a long resume, who's one who could get instant credibility with the media, and that would maybe give the new GM some time to figure this thing out, which there would be a value to that. It also costs a good amount of money. And remember, Steve Phillips has talked about this. The Mets as much as people want to criticize, and there's fair criticisms, they do run this as a profit and loss. They're not going to spend above and beyond what they feel are their means. And there's many reasons for that. I'm not going to get into that. I'm not going to complain about that. It is what it is. So you're going to spend maybe $5 million a year on a manager just to have a big-name manager that will satisfy the media. Well, to me, that's not what the game is about today. And I'm not sure that's going to increase their likelihood of being better next year. I really don't. And that manager comes, and maybe they don't want Ireland, and maybe they don't want the coaching staff. So I think it would be foolish for any GM, regardless of what they feel long-range is the potential for this team, to blow it up next year. I would give Mickey the entire contract. Clearly, if things get bad next year, you know, his job is in jeopardy, and there may be something that has to be you know, looked at. But anyway, I don't think it's been a banner year for Mickey Callaway. I think you give him a C+. I think on a positive note, he was able to keep this team from collapsing and quitting, which they did a lot under Terry Collins in the years they didn't win. There was nothing taken away from those lost seasons. Nothing, really. And you guys could argue till the cows come home on that. There was nothing. Here, I feel like players got better. The pitching got better. I just feel better that there is a plan and there's an idea of what needs to be done now. Does that mean the talent is going to be able to execute it? I don't know. And that's what leads me to the next clip, which we'll get into Jeff Wilpon and Jeff's opening comments. And there's a lot in this that I want to get into. By the way, if you want to call in at any point, I've done this live and I'm opening it up to call. I've had a couple so far today. The number is 646-716-8187, 646-716-8187. You want to throw a at Mike Silva Media tweet here to kind of, you know, give me something on Twitter. That's great. You can do that as well and be my guest on that whole thing. So, again, the number is 646-716-8187. Feel free to call in. I'll be on until 9 o'clock p.m. So let's get to Jeff Wilpon's comments, and we'll start with his intro right there.
Listen, I want to just thank the fans and the support that they gave us all year. I know the year didn't work out the way we wanted. We're very disappointed. I can promise you ownership is disappointed. The front office is disappointed. I think the players are disappointed. The staff's disappointed on the way this all came out and what we did and what we didn't produce this year. I think there's a lot more in the tank for these guys. I think the effort was there, but I don't think we got out of them what we should have gotten out. And that could be partially, even though the effort's there, the talent wasn't. And that's something that the new GM is going to have to work on. You know, the way the fans came out last night for David was spectacular. And I can only say thank you again to them because it's just such a warm feeling. And I know David saw me today and was really thankful again of what that night was for him. I think we owe them something more than what we've given them, and we're going to produce that. You know, Jacob came up to me when I congratulated him the other night. After his 10th win, he said, you know, I got to my goal. I'm like, no, you didn't. We let you down, all right? We should have gotten you 20 wins. There's no way 10 wins is your goal. And if we had played a little bit better, he would have had 20 wins easily, and the Cy Young wouldn't even be in question. Hopefully he wins it anyway, but I think we're in good shape where he is, but we should have helped him some more. I think there's some good things, and not to sugarcoat anything, but, you know, I think Mickey and the staff did a nice job not letting anybody quit and keeping them moving forward, which was certainly something that could have happened. We saw it with other teams in our division where they had a great first half and they fell apart. So that's one thing. I think JP, John, and Omar standing in for Sandy when he left and not making any trades was actually a positive for us because a lot of those guys did better in the second half, and that sets up a new GM to be in a good spot. So, you know, I'm optimistic. I'm encouraged. We're going to go through a process with the GM search. I've gotten a lot of opinions from a lot of people, so it's going to be very broad. Some untraditional candidates will be put into the mix. We'll go through a process at first with just John and myself interviewing them. We're going to start. We have not asked permission on anybody yet. We'll start asking permission next week. and start bringing people in to interview. I think that will show us what's out there and what we can expect to whittle down to a smaller group that will go through a more detailed interview on the second round.
So that was Jeff Wilpon in his introductory remarks. There's a lot more to come. Like I said, and here's where I'm going to give you the as balanced of a view on the ownership as I possibly can. First, I liked how he's basically going out there and taking accountability. I think throughout the interview he took accountability, except for there's one part which I will get to that I think annoyed the fans when it came to investing in the team. And I think the best part of that comment was what he said to Jacob deGrom is like, you shouldn't be, and I don't think Jacob is happy at 10-9, but I think he looked at within his control, you know, he achieved the best he can do with the support he got. And Jeff basically said, hey, look, we got to do better at getting you the support so you could win 20 games. You shouldn't even, you know, have this Cy Young in question. I think, yes, you know, normally you have the GM, and this was Sandy Alderson's job to have these conversations with the media. I don't always think he did a good job with that. I think his sarcasm, his dryness, I don't think did the Mets well. I think Jeff actually, to tell you the truth, in a lot of ways did better than the GM. I think the narrative out there that the GM is a puppet and the GM doesn't have control, the only way you're going to dispel that is to have maybe two or three states of the union with the press, maybe one in spring training. And this should be Jeff, not Fred. I know Fred doesn't really want to speak. Jeff is the chief operating officer. It should be him. Jeff should speak in spring training. He should speak sometime in the middle of the season, and he should speak at the end of the season and maybe make himself available at times in the off season. I think if he did that and had more candid conversations, and I'm not talking about an SNY where it's controlled. I'm talking about like this in an open forum where you don't know where the questions are going to go. It may dispel some of the misinformation. Like he even talked about, and you'll hear it in a bit, the insurance thing, which he never said he wouldn't reinvest insurance. I don't know. I mean, it's hearsay. You know, somebody said it, or I don't think it was made up, but it could be somebody's opinion. It could be something that was said in passing. You don't know what where that source of that information came. So I think from a positive. I think on the negative here, and I'll get to the next comment, let me play the time frame of the GM. And he said something that probably – I know it annoyed a lot of fans that is a bit of a of a red flag because it makes you wonder. This is an interesting fit. I'll get into where this is an interesting fit in a minute. But if you want to call in the number 646-716-8187, this is one of the rare times I do the podcast live. I encourage people to call in. I still have my agenda, but if you want to pop on and make and call in, that's totally up to you. So 646-716-8187, I encourage you to give me a call. Jeff Wilpon on the time frame. About finding a GM. Let's go to that clip.
Well, I think we have to be fair to the process, number one. Obviously, ask permission, get people in. I think if we can have somebody by the GM meetings, that'd be terrific, if not the winter meetings. Again, I have faith in the people we have here with John, JP, and Omar that we can keep working and moving forward. It would be much better to have somebody in place, though, by that time frame, if we can.
So there's a lot of ambiguity about and a lot of lack of commitment about getting a new GM by the GM meetings. Now, I certainly don't believe it's in the organization's best interest to not have somebody by the GM meetings, and definitely not have a GM by the winter meetings. You got to have your plan and ready to execute your plan by the winter meetings. I don't think Jeff wants to set a goal that maybe, you know, when you're along the process with certain people who are going to be in the playoffs and the World Series goes to early November, the GM meetings comes right after, you may be tying up some loose ends. I don't think that that's their plan. I think they absolutely want to have this thing and have their guy by that time. And you know, with the if you think back, they hired Sandy Alderson in 2010 in mid-October. I don't think they had Terry Collins in place until December. They didn't even have a manager. I know that's a lot different. So it's not necessary by the GM meetings to have everything in place, but I think you definitely don't want to go in with John Ricco representing the organization, who really is essentially an extension of Jeff Wilpon at that point. So I'd hope in that situation he's just trying to not set himself up where if they're tying up those loose ends in the interview process that he has to hire somebody or he gets held his feet to the fire. He's going to be careful about putting too much, you know, declarative statements out there because it always comes back to bite you in this town. But this is where it gets clumsy because you have a manager that clearly he's happy with and he likes. He mentioned that in the press conference. He was hired by his father. You know, ownership liked him. He's had some success in the second half with the group, with the starting pitching, with some of the young players. So there's things here that I think the fans, I think ownership, I think they're starting to like what's there. Now you bring an outsider who, and clearly you're not going to hire someone whose philosophy in the interview process is diametrically opposite of what you want. You're going to, you know, ultimately the owner owns the team and has the right to make whatever call he wants, you know, regarding that stuff. You just have to, you know, have a scenario where there's some clarity as early in the offseason as possible about where this team is going to go. Because what you don't want is a disjointed front office going into 2019, and then you go into the season maybe with the team that is built kind of mishmash, and now you're back in the same situation. Because I think it's really important to leverage this pitching, and this pitching is going to get older, and they're going to hit free agency, and it's a good possibility you're not going to keep all four of them. Maybe you don't want to keep all four of them. So I really believe windows of opportunity need to be seized, and that's something that I almost believe it has to, you know, you have to have a more of a win now mentality if you're going to keep the pitching together over the next two seasons. And not having a sense of urgency in getting this front office in place certainly doesn't align with that. And I know that statement, and in the media didn't like it, the fans didn't like it. So now the million-dollar question, we'll start. There's a couple of payroll-type questions. That's really where the rest of these clips are going, with payroll and what have you. Let's start with the first one here. I think this is this is the first comment he made about payroll.
Like I said, ownership and myself, we'd like very much that Mickey's back, and same thing with a lot of the staff. But you can't go out and pick the best candidate that we want for this position and tell him he's hamstrung by, you know, a number of people that are here. So we'll see how that all plays out.
But just for the sake of a couple of live audiences watching, just a reminder to state your name and affiliation. Go ahead, Mike.
Mike Puma, New York Post. Jeff, I'm over here. I think the big question always this time of year is how much money is there going to be a leeway to spend this offseason on free agents?
Yeah, well, we've always set a goal in terms of what the payroll's going to be. It already starts out at a number, and we always exceed that number. Every number of years, as far as you want to go back, we set a target, and that's what we give the GM, and we work with the GM on what that target should be, and then we end up exceeding it because of what's out in the marketplace and what's available. So I would say I can't give you an exact answer on that, but what I can tell you is when a new GM is in place, we will have a plan that we will come back to you with and lay that out.
So he talks about Mickey not having his job definitely safe. He talks about, you know, obviously giving the GM some autonomy. It's really not a payroll question, but it goes back to where there's some uncertainty about, you know, I guess he puts out the possibility that the whole thing could be blown up. I really don't believe, and this is where it gets clumsy, I don't believe that's where they're going to go. I really don't believe that. So, you know, that's I'd be shocked they bring someone in who says fumigate the place. Because any intelligent baseball guy would not say that. I'm sorry. Would not. And if somebody does say that, What they're looking to do is get themselves basically a secure 5-year contract, so they have the built-in excuse that we're rebuilding. And the numbers and the record doesn't matter. We're rebuilding. Remember, when you go out there and you preach organization building and it's constantly about the future and it's constantly about collecting assets, there's a lot of marketing that comes into play with that, and it creates a lot of job security because you don't have to win. Sandy Alderson benefited from that. Not that I think that was his goal or that was his intention, but he was in payroll purgatory. He had some bad contracts. They were coming off the Madoff situation. There was no intention in 11, 12, 13 to win. They started to spend after the 13 season when they saw Harvey come up and produce, and then obviously he had the Tommy John surgery. They spent a little bit to get to 14. They underachieved, I believe, in 14. The data indicates that there was a bit of underachievement there. And then obviously 15, even though there wasn't expectations, they started to make the push, and they made the push where the cycle went really quick. So anyone who comes in and says that, they're just looking for job security, and they're going about what's good for them, not necessarily what's good for what is currently in the organization. So now the next comment is where I think this is where the fans really went bonkers. And I have to say, I agree to a certain extent with the fans, but I also go back where you should understand how this team runs its finances, because it's not a big secret. You've had books written about it by our friend Howard Megdal. Steve Phillips over on MLB Network Radio has talked about how the organization runs its finances. You may not like it, but by this point, you should understand it. And yeah, there's some language that Jeff uses here that doesn't necessarily lend itself to being totally forthright, but it's not like he's completely lying. I believe. So let's go to this clip. This is about the investing, I think, in analytics and things like that.
And looking back at how the season went and ways to improve, there are certain things that stand out. They require an investment maybe on the ownership level. I mean, things like the size of the front office, the analytics staff, improving the minor leagues. Like, do you feel like those things need to be improved, beefed up, added more investment made in those, and how to improve?
I don't think we haven't made the investment. What I can tell you is that the people that are in place are what was asked for by the administration that was here. And if somebody comes in and says we have to beef up this area, that area, we're totally fine to do that. That's not something that we've ever said no to. The minor leagues and the development is definitely a very big focus with a new GM, and a bunch of the questions we have already is how they're going to get us to a point where when players come up from our minor leagues, they're major league ready and they're able to help if somebody gets hurt.
Let's continue that with the next clip here.
And then with David Wright, in the past, you've said you guys did not reinvest the insurance money. With where he is now, is that something you can do going forward, reinvest that into player personnel?
I don't think I ever said that, so I don't necessarily agree with that comment. But it's all put into the mix. The money that comes back or doesn't come back from any insurance or anything that we're doing is in a range that we give the GM, and the new GM will come up with a number with us. And I can guarantee when we come back with more information on who that is and what their plan is, they'll end up exceeding it. And we know that going in.
Tony?
Anthony DeComo, MLB.com. Jeff, in the past, with the exception of Yoenis Cespedes, I guess, over the past 10 years, you haven't really shopped at the top of the free agent market. How much of that was a recommendation of the old regime, and how much do you see yourself sticking with that versus changing and shopping in those areas this year?
I think it was a total recommendation, number one, and number two, until we have somebody on board, I really don't want to answer those questions. We'll come back to you with more information once we get somebody and we lay out a plan. But until I know what the new GM is going to suggest as a plan and we hire that person to go forward with that plan, it'd be premature to answer that.
So this is where it's funny. So basically I tell you, hey, I got $100,000 to spend. It's your choice that you don't want to spend it on the $150,000 car, but you got $100,000 to spend, but it's your choice. Well, that's kind of not totally sincere. Now, I'm not sure. You got two ways here. You could say, well, the organization is not providing the general manager, Sandy Alderson, the resources to get that top end of the market free agent. But then you could also say, well, if you have this much money to spend, which is what the Mets essentially are doing, they're saying, here's your payroll range, here's what we can afford. And I have the numbers. I went to Cott's Contracts here. I have the numbers. And again, if you want to pop in between now and 9 o'clock and give a comment, 646-716-8187, you're more than welcome to do so. 646-716-8187 is the number. You could call in as I'm doing this live. I'm recording the podcast live, so I let anybody call in if they so desire. So I went to Cott's Contracts and looked at the payroll right now for the remainder. And actually, I'm going to go and bring up the tax tracker. So right now, which you, and you really, anybody could do this. You just go to, you Google Cott's Contracts, you bring up Mets, you go to the link with the payroll, and then you have a spreadsheet on Google Google Sheets, and then there's a couple of tabs, and you go to the tax tracker. So anybody could do this. This is not me making stuff up here. And I looked at where the Mets were this year. So the Mets projected, basically it's projected that they spent about $167 million when you add in player benefits, the players in the minors' salary, you know, things like that. You know, arbitration this year, guys, you know, they made an arbitration, then obviously salary. That's about $30 million below what the tax threshold is, which is $197. Now, the tax threshold is going to continue to go up. So the concern, obviously, with the Mets is that they don't want to get hit with a 20% tax rate by hitting the threshold. They're not going to pay that. I mean, that's like bringing in another player, and I don't see how this team with their, you know, with their financial situation, they're not as well healed as the Dodgers. They're not as well healed as the Yankees, the Red Sox, and there's a variety of reasons for that, which is not what this is really all about. So they're not going to go and make that big splash, that big investment right now, but they have some room to play with. $167 million payroll is pretty, with all things considered, is pretty high. It's pretty generous. And if you go to next year, before the arbitration, you're down to about $100 million in liables with when it comes to the payroll. Over 40% of that is right in cespedes. I know that there's been reports of a buyout. Actually, I should say, it's about 44%. 44% of it, or 42% of it, is right in cespedes. I know there's been talks of an insurance buyout negotiation. Cespedes may miss the whole year, so perhaps insurance covers that. So you have some money to play. And it actually goes in and ties in right now with a question from the audience from Kyle Pelleccia. I hope I said your name right, at KPELECH98 on Twitter. Thanks for tweeting at me and getting me that question. And if you want to call in, the number is 646-716-8187. His question was, hey, Mike, I was wondering who is the free agent signing that you want to see this offseason. Obviously, we need a right-handed bat, which could come in the form of Machado Ramos. On the contrary, do we hope that a midseason Peter Alonso call-up balances our batting order? Well, that's a lot there. So now you heard the Mets have, and I think Mike Puma talked about when you add an arbitration, they probably have about $140 million they're liable for. And if three-quarters of the $40 million is picked up by insurance, you know, you're looking at about $110, $115 already on the books. It leaves you, if the Mets want to spend on payroll, something similar this year, which before all the benefits and all that, they were at $150. You got about $35 million to spend. So if you do bring on a big free agent like Machado, most of your money is going to be going to him. Here's what I'll say about Machado, and this is both Harper and Machado. My prediction is as follows. I think they're going to ask for long-term deals, and I think the era of 7 to 10 year deals for players is over. I think the analytics people know that, you know, the liability on the back end of those deals is a chore. I think both of those guys come with risk. I think Machado has the knee risk, and Jim Bowden, former GM, talked about this on MLB Network Radio a couple of years ago, that he, you know, he's had knee injuries, and you're going to ask the guy who's a middle infielder, yes, he can play the corners, to, you know, sign on for 7 to 10 years as you get into his 30s, you know, that's scary. That's scary for any team. I think both of those guys are going to shoot for the moon. I think you're going to be surprised at what they wind up signing with. I wouldn't be surprised if Harper went back to Washington, because I think there's a lot of questions about how good he is, especially with the shifts now and how maybe teams have learned how to pitch him and how he performed this year in his walk year. Very good offensive player, no doubt. But do you want to invest $300, $400 million, $30 to $40 million of your payroll? There's only a couple of teams that can do that in Bryce Harper. And I know the Nats, who have been known to defer money and have some, especially with, you know, they're going through that lawsuit with Masson, that it's probably going to go, it sounds like it may not go in their favor. I'm not really keeping up on that, but I know that's something that, you know, comes into play here. So I don't think those two guys are really something that is realistic. Do I think Wilson Ramos is realistic? Yes, I do. A.J. Pollock, who can play center field, that's a name out there that I think I'm intrigued by. I look at this team, and right now the challenge I have, Kyle, with free agency is that I think the one position, if you really want to upgrade realistically the offense, because I'm not sure just signing a Wilson Ramos, and I think A.J. Pollock, because of his injury history, is a bit of a risk. I'm not sure that just doing that is a shoo-in. It's improved the offense, but I don't think it's a shoo-in. Now, you're going – when doing those kind of moves, you're assuming that Conforto has arrived and that you're getting the best version of Conforto that you're going to get going forward, which is a high-impact bat, that Nimmo could continue to be an on-base, top-of-the-order impact guy. Same for Jeff McNeil. You mentioned Alonso. Look, we don't know what Alonso's all about. I think he's had a great year in the minor leagues. He wouldn't be the first guy to go bananas in the Pacific Coast League and have to adjust coming up. Remember, McNeil has had a really good foray into the big leagues, and he's got over 200 plate appearances, so he's been around the league a couple times. But let's see next year. I have to see him when he goes through that first slump. Can he come out of it? Let's see how, when he comes back after a lot of videos out, a lot of scouting reports, spring training, all that stuff, let's see how McNeil plays. And I think that's where the concern comes when people say the Mets go into seasons with a lot of ifs. If McNeil flops, what's your plan B at second? They don't have one right now. So you need some guarantees. That's why I think it's more realistic to go with McNeil. You go and you try to beef up the catching. I don't think Grandel is a guy that they're going to go and spend for. I think Ramos is a guy you can get maybe on a shorter deal. And at least he knows the National League East. You kind of know what you're getting there. Grandel's out in L.A., and he's certainly good. But why would he leave L.A.? I mean, and if the Dodgers are letting him walk, you may want to ask yourself, what do they know that you know, we don't? Pollock, same way. I think Pollock is an upgrade. But I've even seen Adam Fisher, who formerly was in the Mets front office, who's on Twitter, works for SNY, doing some stuff, talk about how he's concerned about Pollock's injury history. And he's actually bullish on giving Lagares an opportunity to be the everyday outfielder. You also have to go in, and I know you shouldn't count on Cespedes at all next year. That'd be foolish. But if Cespedes does come back and you have Pollock, Nimmo, Conforto, you really have no place for Cespedes. He's going to come back eventually, if not next year, the year after. So you have to really think about that. It's a tricky spot. Where I really think, Kyle, and I'm going long-winded here on this, but where I really think, and here's something really interesting to chew on, would you trade Todd Frazier? Because he's only making about $8 million. Let me look, make sure I'm right. Yeah, he's making $9 million next year. It's very reasonable. And you could probably find a trade partner for Frazier. You might even be able to get yourself a bullpen arm for him. You know, maybe a reliever that's making some money that, you know, maybe go to the, you know, you can't go to the Rockies, of course, but the Rockies are a team that brought a lot of relievers. And is there a team out there that has a reliever and they need a third baseman? Would they trade for Frazier and sign Daniel Murphy to play third base? You know Murphy, his knees obviously are a bit of an issue. He's probably better suited to go to the American League, but maybe third base would take a little bit of the wear and tear off of him playing there. He's a guy that can play first. He can play second, so you can move him around the diamond a little bit. He gives you versatility. I think he's got leadership qualities. He's played here. He's led them to a World Series here. The fans love him. I know he's a lefty bat, so that doesn't really, and Jeff Wilpon talked about it, it doesn't really fit the We need a right-handed bat mold, but you start there with Murphy. You got Murphy, you got McNeil, you got Rosario. You know, eventually you got to think that Alonso is going to be the first baseman. You could always put, and I know Flores with the arthritic knees maybe is a non-tender candidate, but maybe he's your hedge over at first if Alonso doesn't work out. I'm not even big. I think Dom Smith's a trade candidate. I'm not really big on Dom Smith. I think he needs to go somewhere else to become, if he's ever going to become something. And, of course, you have Jay Bruce, who's lefty at first. I think they may look to trade Jay Bruce if they can. I don't know if they can. I'm not sure. I'm convinced that Bruce will be on the roster because I think their best outfield is a defensive center fielder, Conforto, and Nimmo. And I don't think Nimmo's a center fielder, and I would rather them go defensive-minded up the middle. I think that's important. So you don't have a lot of offensive opportunities to improve at a high level if you focus on catcher and center field because those guys are not out there. So I would think about doing that. I would think about Murphy at third base. And then you have maybe a Wilson Ramos behind the plate because I think that's more realistic. And then you have potentially you go with Lagares in center or maybe you see if you could sign Pollock. But I think if you bring in Murphy and you spend the money on Murphy, I think it's more realistic that they go defense and center. And I'm okay with that. I think defense is important. You know, can Lagares be a contact hitter that gives you a good at-bat, plays gold glove-level defense? You know, his injuries have been really freakish, so I can't say – I know he's injury-prone, but I don't put him in that injury-prone category that, you know, other players are in a lot of ways. So Machado and any high-level free agent, the blueprint to sign guys like that is to go out and blow away the competition and pay them the most. I don't think Machado – I always think the West Coast, and I've said this on many podcasts, I think the West Coast has such an advantage over the East Coast because of lifestyle going forward when it comes to free agency in all sports. I'm not sure that the Dodgers are just going to let him walk. And I think a lot will depend on his experience here in the postseason. Now, I understand that Beltran with the Astros in 2005 had that great postseason. They went to the World Series. You know, they had success. And then the Mets outbid the Astros and almost, you know, he went to the Yankees for a lot less. Mets played at a high stratosphere. That high stratosphere in 2005 dollars versus today is night and day. And the Mets are in a different financial position today because they don't have those fake earnings that they thought they had with Madoff back. Then, remember, Steve Phillips has talked about it. They run this like a business where it's profit loss. They're not going to take deep losses to put money into payroll. They're just not going to do it. You're going to have to win. And whoever's responsible is going to have to win with being fiscally responsible. The criticism about that is that the budget seems to move constantly. It makes it very hard to put a plan together. Sandy Alderson was a plan A, a plan B, a plan C guy. And as the offseason goes on, if you can't pivot quickly, you lose out on guys because agents don't want to sit around and wait because agents, it's like musical chairs with them too. And you are on the wrong end of musical chairs as an agent, you can get fired. It happens. So I don't think the Mets play at that high level. I don't think Machado's where they play. I think they play at middle tier. I know that's not sexy, but I don't think they can't win doing that. I think they can win. And you guys continue, have to remember, they have elite starting pitching that needs to be paid. Right now, DeGrom at the top with healthy Wheeler, and Wheeler gave you as good a second half as DeGrom right now. With Syndergaard put in, you know, I think Syndergaard's more of a number two at times, you know, along with Wheeler. And Mats, who can be in the four or five spot, to me, that's more than enough to win. I think you go out, and I'm not sure I'm sold on Vargas being the, you know, league average fifth starter. If I were the new GM, I'd talk to Island a lot about him and see what he thinks. Oswalt is another depth. You really have to worry about your starting pitching depth because those guys are, you know, there's doubleheaders, there's rainouts. You assume one of them is going to maybe need to miss a start. Is Justin Dunn ready? You don't want to get out where you're scrambling and looking at the trash pile in June to make a spot start because then you're throwing games away. And that's what happened in 2017 a lot. Now, they had – I mean, in 2016, they went 10-11 deep, and they got fortunate that Lugo and Gazelman – and by the way, those guys are going to play a lot into the bullpen part because I think Gazelman is probably more inclined not to be a high-leverage late-game reliever. I know he did it this year, but he was hittable. I think I'd put him in more into a long guy, fifth, sixth, seventh guy, because earlier in the year when they brought him in, more in the fifth, sixth inning, I think he did better. Lugo did really well as that two-inning reliever. I know they're going to train him to be a starter for spring training. I think that's smart because if you're trained to start, going back to relieving is probably easy. That's at least my novice opinion. So I think that'll play a lot into, you know, on that. And to wrap up Kyle's point, in regards to Syndergaard, do you trade him? No, I don't. I don't trade any of the starting pitching, Kyle. I mean, that's, you know, thanks for that comment. Thanks for participating in the Twitter portion of this. So, you know, I do not trade Noah Syndergaard. I don't trade any of the starting pitching. If you start trading the starting pitching, you're pretty much going for rebuild. Right now, you don't have enough offense. This team has to be built on good start, really good starting pitching, a diverse, contact-oriented, less wait for the three-run homer offense because you got some guys in there that are like that, like McNeil and Nimmo. And they need to figure out the bullpen. Sandy Alderson never figured out the bullpen during his tenure. They need to figure out the bullpen. So, you know, that's a lot of what I see over there. So, hey, last 10 minutes, going to take a quick break, recoup here a little bit, get us a glass of water maybe. Final thoughts, you want to call in to wrap up, the number is 646-716-8187. Live podcast, Talking Mets podcast here, doing it live like I don't normally do. And I had a couple of calls earlier tonight. And if you want to call in, send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media. You're more than welcome to. Wrapping up with the Talking Mets podcast right after this.
Hey, Mets fans, I'm going to let you in on a little secret. If you're looking for the best unbiased and independent coverage of the New York Mets, then look no further than MetsMerizedOnline.com. Mesmerized Online is the go-to place for comprehensive Mets coverage, including exclusive interviews, daily original articles, great weekly features, in-depth analysis, minor league reports, game-by-game breakdowns, and so much more. Find out why thousands of fans turn to Mesmerized Online every day to get the latest news and opinions about the Mets. Coming from an impressive staff of the most passionate fans and skilled writers ever assembled, all in one place. Check it out for yourselves, Mets fans. Go to MetsMerizedOnline.com right now. That's Mets, M-E-R-I-Z-E-D, online.com, and get Metsmerized today.
We're back, wrapping up the call, you know, live show, and welcome calls in if you want to call in before it's wrapped up. 646-716-8187. 646-716-8187. Appreciate everybody for listening live, listening. If you're listening on replay, thank you as well. Looking at some of the free agents, I mean, again, and I said this, I think I was on with Rich Catino at 5:40 a.m. WLIE. There isn't a heck of a lot out there. I mean, if you look right now at center field, you know, you got A.J. Pollock, I mentioned. I don't really know if I consider Andrew McCutchen a center fielder. Adam Jones, I don't know about, you know, signing him. He's at 33 years old. You know, Carlos Gomez, been there, done that. So you really have to make a decision here on center field. I don't think Lagares is out of the question. I know, and we'll talk more about it as the offseason goes on. I mean, you're probably laughing, oh, I'll bring Lagares back. But you want to focus on defense. I think your best bet of beefing up the offense – you got to, first of all, if Alonzo's the real deal, that's a big win. Because Alonzo and McNeil change a lot. A lot. I think you look at third base. I like Todd Frazier. I think Todd Frazier, you know, he was hurt. He did not have a good first year here in New York. I don't know if it's because he was home the whole time, but because, you know, he was pretty decent. Not great with the Yankees, but he was pretty good with the Yankees. And he's a guy that you want to bat down in the lineup. I think too often both Bruce and Frazier were relied on to be 3-4 guys. Those are not the guys. Bruce is middle of the order, like a 4-5 guy, maybe more like 5. And I think Frazier's a guy that does best down in the lower third of the lineup. They're not the middle of the order guy. He's just not. And I think that they put him in there because of a variety of reasons, and mainly because Cespedes, and he you know, Cespedes not being around, that was a big dynamic that was missing. I think you go after Daniel Murphy as a third baseman. I don't know, and again, you don't know who the GM is, and that's why it goes back to what I said. I really don't believe they won't have a plan or a GM in by the GM meetings. I think Jeff was just trying not to commit to a time frame because he could get burnt by that. But I just don't think, and I think Daniel Murphy is a good way. He's a grinder. He'll fit right in with this group. And I don't know what kind of contract he's going to demand, but at his age and with his history, I don't think he'll get more than 3 years. I really don't. That's what he got last time. That's what he'll get again. I mean, Daniel Murphy is what age is he? He's 34 years old. He might only get 2 years. So you could get him on a really good value. I think starting pitching, you know, Mickey Callaway had talked at times about starting pitching. You know, there's Gio Gonzalez is a possibility. The real question would be, do you want to upgrade the rotation in the five spot from Vargas? Certainly Gonzalez would be that guy, but at what cost and what is it going to take away? That's why you have to look at and be realistic about what kind of finances you have. The team only brings in so much profitability. The Mets are what they are from a brand. You could complain about that because of the owners. That's a whole different conversation. But more importantly, it's reality. So how are you going to spend that money? You go down the relievers. There's Brad Brock, who's an interesting reliever. You know, Familia, who I'd be careful with. Kelvin Herrera's out there. Geez. I'm going up and down this list. Joe Kelly. I don't think I would go and go crazy on Kimbrel at 31. But Norris. Look at a name. This is the guy to look at, Adam Ottavino. I'd be careful about giving a closer job. He walks a lot of batters. That's the only thing. A lot of these guys, you strike out a lot of guys, they walk so many guys. I mean, Ottavino's at like 4 per 9. I know the strikeout rate's really high, but I just hate walks. The other name I'd keep an eye on, and I know he's 34, but he's got a Callaway connection, is Andrew Miller. And he can come in, and he's still good. I know he's dropped off a little bit because of injuries. He's still good, but I would look at that name too. So that's that. So we're wrapping up the 2018 season here. Heard Mickey Callaway's comments. We heard from Jeff Wilpon. Talked a lot in the first half hour about David Wright. And, you know, now it's on to the hot stove. It's on to the offseason, watching the rest of the league battle it out for who will be the 2018 World Series champion. What about the show, you ask? Well, I have a couple ideas for podcasts in the month of October. We are going to take some time off. The GM search will dictate a lot about content, but what you got tonight with me recording live and taking a couple of calls and putting up the audio from Mickey Callaway, Jeff Wilpon, we'll have to tide you over for a little bit. But I will be very nimble. If something happens that requires or meets fresh content, I'll be more than willing to pop on. But I think it's probably going to be a couple of weeks before the next podcast, at the very least. But I do have some ideas, and stay tuned for more Talking Mets over the course of the coming months in the hot stove. As far as wrapping up the season, I want to thank everybody for tuning in weekly. Another record year. Every year we've had more listeners than the year before. The support from MetsMorizedOnline.com was tremendous. Without you guys, without that ability to have you as partners, you know, it's a lot harder to get the word out there in this day and age. It's very hard with the saturation of podcasts and blogs and websites and the mainstream media finally figuring out how to do a lot of this stuff. I think I provide a nice niche. I think I'm entertaining. I think I give you some mental bubble gum to get you through a piece of your day, and that's my goal. Throwing in some written content here and there, I know it's, you know, sporadic, but it'll be probably 3 to 4 times a month. Like to do a feature column of opinion, an op-ed, so to speak, or opinion-based column. Something soon will be coming up. You'll probably get in the next couple of weeks more written than podcast, just because I think it's time to decompress and let today's news settle in and see who the next GM is and what news comes out about the team and the direction they're going to go. So I want to thank you guys. I want to thank you for a great season. I really appreciate your support. And we're going to continue to have this podcast going forward. We're going to continue to do the things we do. And hopefully, you know, we'll have some more live call-ins where I'll record the show live. And if the calls come in, they come in. If they don't, they don't. I plan these podcasts if I don't get a single call, because I know it's hard to have appointment radio these days. So I thought we got a couple of good calls. I had a couple of guys say they wanted to call in. They did, and gave us some interesting perspectives, some old friends. So anyway, I want to thank everybody for tuning in today. Of course, I want to thank the good folks over at MetsMemorizedOnline.com. As always, you could send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media, and you can get the show on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Thank you all for a great 2018 season. We'll be back with more talking podcasts in the off season. Till then, be well. We'll talk soon. Thanks a lot.
Mike Rowe here with a few thoughts on my favorite sweatshirt, a classic zip-up hoodie that used to be navy blue but has since faded to what the fashionistas call a distressed indigo. It's 13 years old, soft as a flannel bathrobe, and after a few hundred dirty jobs, demonstrably and undeniably indestructible. This is the kind of sweatshirt girlfriends like to permanently borrow, but I've held on to this one because I got it from American Giant. American Giant makes all their stuff right here in the USA, so they can control every link in their own supply chain. That matters, because when you buy American Giant, you not only get great quality, you create jobs for people in factory towns all over the country. No pressure, but if you give a damn about the business of making things in America, you got to support the companies who are doing it right. Go to American-Giant.com/Mike to get 20% off your first order. That's American-Giant.com/Mike.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.